It's amazing that we are still here, isn't it? That I'm still here blows my own mind. I'm Reverend Sonia Milton. Most of you, several of you know me. I'm around here sometimes helping in different ways, and you got that. And it's, oh, this happened to me last time. It's so funny. I mixed my notes all up. You know, I'm always blown away by being in the moment. You know, when I let go of how I think I'm supposed to be and what I planned, and then I just am in the moment. And so in the moment of hearing this song and my own memories, which I wasn't really, you know, planning to mention, but this is like the culmination of this amazing season for nonviolence. Not that we don't want to live this way all year long, but we really acknowledge this time anchored by the birthdays of Dr. King and Gandhi, and I know Reverend Denise because she's so passionate about this, and in several ministries over several years has brought this awareness to our movement and to all of you. And what I'm remembering, because we were talking earlier about the movie Selma, and when I saw the movie, it reminded me of my own experience, which I don't really think about a lot or talk about, but that movie really brought it up, which is that I was a high school student living in St. Augustine, Florida in the mid-60s, and I'm originally from New York, where we didn't always get along well, but we all were together not getting along well, you know? And I moved to this very segregated, very southern town, and not only were we from the north, we were beatniks, and we were Jewish. So my brother, I mentioned earlier that my brother was beaten up, but my brother was 11, and he was beaten up by the kids in school, not by the police. But we had Dr. King come to St. Augustine. I saw him arrested. I saw the KKK march in full dress through the city gates on the 4th of July. And I marched. And I went to secret meetings. And my mother, in her infinite letting go of us, let us go do this. And it was dangerous and it was crazy. And if I think about it now, I don't know if I'd let a child of mine do the things that we did. But thank goodness, thank God, thank Goddess that I did and that we did and that I can stand here today and talk about this. And these are interesting times because some of us are concerned about some of our basic rights. And wherever we stand in the political arena, it's not about politics. It's really about basic humanity. And so I'm privileged to stand here with you today. And it's very funny how I mixed up my notes. As if the notes really matter, you know, because what it's really about, isn't it, what life is about, what our life is about, is coming to ourselves and being able to be with ourselves, to be comfortable with who we are. And when we're not comfortable with who we are is to ferret that out and become comfortable. So learning to really live from the inside out. So those of us on the path, and we're all on the path whether we like it or not or know it or are aware of it or not, we finally get to a point where we're, you know, awake, alert. We come to unity. We have an experience of a greater presence, whatever we want to call it. Some of us call it God or spirit or divine mind or whatever. I read an article just the other day about how to get millennials in the church. And it said, don't use the word God. So it doesn't matter what we call this presence and this power and this activity. Because really, God is an activity, isn't it? God is a verb, this activity of life urging us and sourcing us, and it's a wonderful thing. And then at some point, again, we have this awakening, and then something happens that stirs us up. And that's a great thing, too, isn't it? Isn't that a gift? We become dissatisfied with our sense of reality, because our experience of ourselves change as we experience reality differently. And then we have to start wrestling with that. And, you know, I wasn't raised with the Bible, so I have a great relationship with the Bible. I really like it as a story of the evolution of consciousness from the beginning of Genesis, from creation all the way to Revelation. It's really a great thing to look along the way. We had Jacob wrestling with the angel. And that wrestling that goes on and on, and the angel says, let me go. And Jacob says, I won't let you go until you bless me. And what was the blessing? The blessing was a wound, right in his thigh, a wound. And then a name change. He became Israel. And how those wounds and those name changes represent changes of consciousness. And how that happens for us over and over, whether we actually change our name or get wounded. I mean, we all get wounded, don't we, in certain ways, whether it's physically or not, our sacred wounds. So then we have to do our work. We do our shadow work and our therapy work and all the great things that are offered here, you know, the classes and the meditation groups and opportunities for service, all those things that just kind of get us to the next thing, being with each other when we need that kind of community, when things don't always feel so good or look so good. And then we become congruent again and have our well-being and have this sense of wholeness until it happens again. And we let go and we integrate and we let go and we integrate, and then we have to surrender some more and we have to let go of attachment some more. Especially I'm finding it in my aging body, my aging relationship. It's more about letting go and integrating and letting go and integrating. And finally realizing that we have to choose what it is we truly want. What is it we truly want? What is it you really want? And not an out there what you want, but an in here what you want, because this is really the only thing you have any control over. And it's the most interesting thing, isn't it?
Yes.
It's the most interesting thing, what goes on in our own consciousness, in our own body, in our own life, and how we respond and react. So I love this idea of desire. You know, what do we want? Now, the Hindus look at desire in four ways. And the first way they look at it is pleasure. You know, if it feels good, do it. And there's nothing inherently wrong with that. But the time comes in one lifetime or another where it's just not enough to provide happiness, this pursuit of pleasure. And so the next thing is this desire for worldly success, you know, money, fame, power. And again, it's fine to pursue these goals, but it's not enough. And eventually the Hindus say that we get to a place, we mature to a place, we evolve to a place where we just want to be a really good person, simply a really good person, and to help others. And that's very noble, but even that falls short of what our hungry souls really want. And finally, the Hindus say, what we truly want is liberation. They call that mukti. What we truly want is to express and experience and express our true nature, our Christ self, our God self. And those of us new to unity, I just want to remind you, when we talk about the Christ self, we're not talking about the person Jesus Christ. We're talking about that energy, that anointing, that spark that each one of us has and develops that unites us all together. And Jesus Christ happened to be someone who understood that and shared that and taught that. Not always in a nice, sweet way, right? We need to remember that. Those photos of those paintings of that nice blue-eyed blonde Jesus, you know, it's just so, you know. And aside, I want to recommend a book to many of you. It's by a writing teacher of mine, actually. Her name is China Galland, and it's called In Search of a Black Madonna. And it's a wonderful, you're familiar? And it's a wonderful journey she took looking for these images all over Eastern Europe that are there. So we want that, don't we? Isn't that what we really want, is that truth of our being? So if our true nature is to awaken, if our true desire is to awaken, it might be interesting to look at what the nature of desire itself is. Now, many of you Unity students are familiar with Dr. Emily Cady. She was a homeopathic physician who lived in New York City. Her sister, in fact, was Elizabeth Cady Stanton, the suffragette. So it was like a really powerful matriarchic family. She had studied with the Fillmores from afar. In fact, they never met. And at some point, they asked her to develop a correspondence course, some lessons to teach the Unity Principles. And out of that came the book Lessons in Truth. So many of you are familiar with that. If you haven't read it, it's absolutely beautiful. And it really talks about our teachings in a very beautiful, aligning way. So Dr. Kathy said about desire. She said that desire is God tapping on the door of our consciousness. Desire is God tapping on the door of your consciousness. So don't you feel that sometimes, that wonderful urge? And yet at the same time, what did the Buddha say about desire? Desire is the cause of all suffering. So how can both be true? Because if our deepest desire is to know our essential self, to experience our essential self, to express our essential self, how can it be the cause of suffering? But sometimes, doesn't that essence get repressed? It gets knocked down, it gets held down, and then it comes out in some circuitous, unhealthy, strange, polluting way. So desire as the cause of suffering refers to maybe desire with attachment, with a craving. Because if you haven't been able to express who you are, and you see that in your own life, you see anybody not get like shot down as a child? I mean, certainly safety issues are important. Don't touch that, you'll get burned. But when that true yearning that you have, that you had, that you still have, and for whatever reason you let something from the outside, somebody, hold that down, that's got to come out in some way. And it's usually in an unhealthy way, an addiction, a craving. So it's not desire that's problematic, it's attachment to the desire. Do you get that? That's the craving. Because pure desire is God tapping at the door of your consciousness. And you know from your life the things that came out of that. The beautiful, creative, God-inspired ideas and creations that came out of that desire. So how do we do it? How do we discern our pure desire from craving? How do we know when it's the ego that's wanting and demanding and craving what it wants? And how do we know when it's the still, small voice? Now, again, from the Bible, we're talking about the movement of consciousness. So we have now God is moving from this demanding, loud, punitive him to something different when Elijah goes up the mountain after being through all sorts of his own hell. And he hears the wind. And he sees a fire. And then there's an earthquake. And he can't find God in any of these places. And then what does it say? There was God, there was Spirit, in the still, small voice. Isn't that beautiful? I mean, that's a real shift, isn't it? And hasn't that been a shift to you? It's not your parents yelling at you to tell you what to do or what to not to do, but it's this inner voice, this still, small voice, or as a more recent translation says, the sound of sheer silence. See, I heard an actual silence expert, a PhD in silence, really, a teacher at Princeton. I heard an interview with him, and he talked about silence not being the absence of sound, but silence being the absence of noise. So take that discernment into your life and into your meditations. So silence comes in lots of ways. So I don't know about you, but in these very interesting times, it's been easier for me to just veg out and go to some old patterns than to deal with how I'm feeling. I have a greater level of stress and anxiety in my life than I've had before, and I see it shared. And I don't want to use it as a judgment, but more as an opportunity for me to like pull it in, get a little more centered, decide how I want to spend my time, who I want to be with in a clearer way. And to come back to my practice. Well, it's always the practice, isn't it? It's not easy. So I was inspired in this talk and lately with the book. I understand you don't have it in the bookstore now, but you probably can get it. It's Robert Brummett, who's a Unity minister, who has spoken to, I think he has spoken here or taught here. And he's a wonderful teacher, and he's also an instructor of Vipassana meditation. He's really teaches a lot about mindfulness, and this book is called Birthing a Greater Reality by Reverend Robert Brummett, and it's easy to get a hold of. I know the bookstore is going to take a look at that. And he talks about mindfulness in a way that I really like, because he talks about it being a two-edged sword. It's the sword that cuts through the veil of Maya, Maya being illusion. So again, how do we live our lives now? How do we get clarity in what we really want? How do we know what's just our mind wanting something because it fills us up in the moment and satisfies it in the moment, and that authentic call from spirit to be really authentic, to really tune into my God self? And so it comes back again to the practice, to being with self in an authentic way. And this these two edges of the sort of mindfulness is that of awareness and that of equanimity. Now, awareness is about there's the chair and there's the microphone and there's the box of tissues. And equanimity refers to that equal-mindedness. So there's a red shirt. I like the shirt. I don't like the red shirt. That doesn't really matter. There's a chair. I like the chair. I don't like the chair is good. The chair is bad. It's about everything having kind of an equal value. There's no good or bad or right or wrong. Is that easy? Is that a good practice? Does that clear your mind and clear your heart and make it easier then when you do have to discern those kinds of things? We cultivate this kind of bare attention, being aware of what it's experienced apart from our thoughts. So seeing is seeing, thinking is thinking, hearing is hearing, feeling is simply feeling. So let's just take a moment and practice that for a moment now, because here we are all together. And so we've already had our time of meditation, but we'll just take another few moments. So do whatever it is that you do to become comfortable here. Loosen anything that's tight in your body, you know, the jaw, the knees, the hips, the belly. Let go of the belly. Oh, that's good. We're not supposed to do that, but it feels so good, doesn't it? Let go of the belly. Nobody's looking. Yes, you look thin in that. You don't look fat in that. God, I haven't asked that in years. I guess I'm having some evolution and growth. Now, just notice the breath entering into your nostrils, not changing it, not judging it, but notice the temperature of the air, the sensation of the air coming in, where it goes in the body, and then what it does when it leaves. Whether you exhale through your mouth or through your nostrils, but breathe in through your nose and out, however you do, and just have a few breaths, and I'll just be quiet for a moment. Just notice what you notice. Nowhere to go, nothing to do, no assessments, evaluations, or judgments. Just now, to now, to now, to now. And as you're ready, gently allow your eyes to open and come back to this here and now with your consciousness, because you never really left. It's just your mind went. See, what we really want is to feel and experience and express that truth of ourselves. And one way, one beautiful way we do that is the way that we connect with each other in those namaste moments, where that which is holy and true and Christed and non-judgmental, that in me that's that, sees and acknowledges that in you. So when we see the best in each other, we're shoring up the best in ourselves. So I want to close with a piece from the 133rd Psalm. Because it's really about this. How very good and pleasant it is when kindred live together in unity. It's like precious oil on the head, running down the beard, on the beard of Aaron, running over the collar of his robes. Isn't that delicious? It's like the dew of Hermon, which falls on the mountains of Zion, for there the Lord ordained his blessing, life forevermore. So shalom and namaste. How delicious we are.